Welcome, everybody. This is the sound portion of the Divine Manifestations of God, and I'm absolutely delighted to talk about this one because of all the different aspects of God. This is God's gift to us, is sound, because he makes himself more tangible this way. It's hard to feel him as easily, I think, as through sound. So today what I'd like to share with all of you are opportunities to feel different aspects of sound and what they do to our consciousness, how they affect us, so that we can use sound to help change our consciousness whenever we wish. You know, there's some easy ways to do it and there's some subtle ways that to do it. We're going to just explore some of that here today. A lot of what I want to do is play music for you or sing with you and have us feel what that feels like inside. Okay. But before I start, how many of you know what an earworm is? Have you ever heard the word earworm? You know, what is it?
It's when a song or a chant is in your mind and you just keep hearing it over and over again.
Yeah, and it's hard to shake it out. So it's just kind of stuck in there and it just goes round and round. It's I think of it as a sign that we are vibration or sound ourselves, because if you walk into a store, any store, you walk out again about 10 minutes later, you're singing whatever it was they were playing in the store. And sometimes you just can't shake it out until you get to the next store and it's a different song. So the sounds that are around us, they get absorbed into us as if we're sponges. It's not a proof necessarily, but to me it's the closest quasi-proof that we are vibration. The way in which we just absorb sound, pick up sound, vibrate with sound, against our will even, sound just comes in. Almost all of us will have a sound rolling around almost all the time, a piece of music, a sound vibration that's happening in the mind. So instead of allowing that to happen unconsciously by just letting it come in however it will, we, except for retail stores, we have a lot of choice about what we listen to and what we use to change our consciousness. So we're going to explore that tonight with different sounds, see how they affect us and how we can choose sounds that will uplift us more. Hi. Oh, and we have a special guest here tonight. We have Steve visiting us from the Ananda Meditation Group and Center in New England. So welcome, Steve. Yeah, he's visiting all the communities all around the United States as part of a grand tour. Sounds like a fun trip, actually. Yeah, great. Okay. So what I'd like to do is I'm going to go into the back of the room. I'm going to play a piece, and I'd like you to, either you can close your eyes or have your eyes open, and just see what you notice. And then we'll come back, we'll talk about it a little bit, and we'll go on to the next one. Okay. Dum, dum, dum.
In the hall, and the greatest my chances. I forgot how nice romance is. I haven't been there for the longest time.
Okay. What do you think? No, isn't it? I have a secret to tell you. That song has never been played in this room before. How did that feel? What did you notice? Yeah. Yeah. What is it? What? I saw a few people bouncing around in their seats. Anybody else?
I remember where I think I heard it last. Like 1990, I was in Tahoe going, I think I heard this song here.
Yeah.
Obviously, it gets you moving as much from the waist down as anything. I mean, mm-hmm. It really is different than the music we listen to. But first of all, that music was sweet in those days. It wasn't like hard. I hope you're not going to play any acid rock with me.
That's the most unusual piece we'll hear in here today.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Because there were so many wonderful memories and feelings, I was amazed at how it opened my heart. It didn't just feel like horrible rock and roll. It felt wonderful. I said to Steve, you wanted your
jitterbug. I felt the same way. Yeah, I felt like little bubbles. I don't know. Boop, boop, beep, boop, boop, like that. It just picks you up a little. Yeah. Yeah. If I were feeling jaded, cynical, discouraged, that might be my next song, you know, to just sort of boop, boop, beep, boop, boop, just get you ready to, because until your energy is up, it's hard to go in. You know, if you try and go inward when you're kind of like this, you can be sad going inward. And so, bloop, bloop, bloop. So think about for you. I mean, that's just a kind of a piece. But there's music for all of us that just cheers us up, whatever it might be. And sometimes that's the next stage from wherever you happen to be feeling. So, okay, next. Isn't this fun? This one you might not have heard before, but we'll see. Isn't that lovely? What do you feel when you hear that one?
Such a longing devotion.
Yeah, yeah, it's an American folk song that's arranged in that way, and it feels like a spiritual piece of music. It's like you're longing for not just for the Missouri or whatever they're singing about, but something. Yeah, into freedom. Yeah, someone here? Yeah. So peaceful.
By the way, I heard the Russian Army chorus do that.
Did you? Wow. I bet. the Russian Army chorus. Can you imagine all big, deep voices? Yes, happy to. Sure. He heard the Russian Army choir singing that. I was at the Missouri River a couple of years ago, and I just sat by the side of the river for 2 hours, and I sang that song over and over again. It was just, I don't know, it just felt like a chant, that melodic line. I long to see your shining valley. I won't sing the rest. I'm not in good voice tonight, but just so longing. So if you're looking for, someone asked a saint once, how can you find God? And the saint replied, you have to want him so much that you weep at the thought of him. That's how much you need to want God. And so sometimes people say, oh, Ananda, people, you sing all these longing songs to God. We have God right now. We're divine. He's with us. But the truth of it is, it's harder to get to him than just asserting that we're divine. And that, I think, we have to cultivate that strong feeling of longing, and music sometimes really brings us into that. Singing that song really helps me so much that way. Anyway, next, are you ready for your next adventure? Okay, here comes. What do you think? What do you feel? Yeah.
It's very haunting.
Yes.
What was that?
That's the Adagio by Samuel Barber. What else did you feel? Floating on a river, just as sort of a going and going. Exactly. Anybody notice an emotional state with it? What?
I just started crying.
Yes, I do too.
I was just like,
whoa. Yeah. Anybody else feel that? Pardon me? Wonderful, beautiful. Deep connection with the divine, she said. Anybody else? Anything interesting?
Right
here. A piercing, affecting qualities, tears down his face, he was saying.
Melancholy for me.
Yeah, melancholy.
Like a story was happening, and it was my story and another story.
Right. And Shanti, you were saying something too? Yeah. It never allowed you to leave the sadness. Yeah, yeah. She said she couldn't leave the sadness. It kept holding her. These are perceptive interpretations of this because this is the piece that was chosen at the funeral ceremony for everyone who died in 9/11. This was the piece that was performed for that piece because it is so, it allows you to just deeply rest in the tragedy and the depth of feeling that you have from it. It lets people deeply feel it. I don't know about you, but when sometimes I'll go to a funeral or something sad will happen, but I'm not that in touch with my feelings about it, so I don't feel it fully. It doesn't get fully experienced by me, and so it's in there somewhere, but I didn't chew on it fully and digest it. And so sometimes actually it's a help to let yourself find a way to access those deep feelings and really just chew through them fully, you know, so that you can mourn the loss of a loved one fully. Or, you know, this music also reminds me of the Nazi Germany, the loss of, I think it was written with that in mind actually. Yeah, I think he wrote this piece actually in New York during the time that, or after the time it was known that so many people had died in the war. So anyway, so sometimes people think, oh, we should always be cheerful, keep your energy positive and all that, but there's something also very important about feeling what you feel and going moving through it, through the heart of it until you've finished it up and you can move on. Yeah. No, you can't be truly cheerful until you've worked through your stuff, essentially. My sister, she's going through a very painful divorce right now. Someone she's been with for a long time. They need to separate, but it's still very hard. But she's being brave. And so she went to a doctor who's sensitive to energy, and the doctor said, oh my gosh, your liver is totally blocked up with anger and negative emotions that haven't yet been let go. And she won't really be able to do that, I think, until she's through the whole process. But even if we think we're being brave, stuff is happening in there. And I use music as therapy that way, just to feel it and then let it move through. Anyway, okay, so next. Isn't this so interesting? It was very sweet of God to give us all of this, all of these tools. What do you feel when you hear that one? Lovely, aren't they? Chords, lovely. It's hard to hear the words on that one, so, but just the feel of the piece, what did anybody experience?
It got more uplifting.
Definitely more uplifting, yes. Yeah. Yeah, this one he's saying differently. This one allows you to escape this, the sadness of it. You can move up out of it a little ways. Yes, acceptance, forgiveness, unconditional love. That's just, that's the chord on that. Just, it's like, ah, I feel loved. That's what I feel too. Yes, the first part is a little different. And then there's this, yeah, exactly. It's called The Lamb, L-A-M-B. It's by John Taverner. He has a very classic sound, if you've heard his music. And I'm thinking to have our choir do that at Christmas time. It's so intoxicatingly beautiful. It's about Christ. It's the piece is sung to about Christ as the Lamb, little Lamb. But there's the sadness around it a little because Christ... It's not only he just loves us unconditionally, but there's also those, some of those chords are reminding you that it doesn't always work out beautifully for him in this world. Oh, how interesting. Yeah. Oh, how lovely. Nice. Chanti's talking about how she felt it up here. Yeah, pierced in your heart. Oh, lovely. Wow. I didn't do this on purpose, but I'm glad that that's what we're marching up the chakras. I'd hate to be marching us down the chakras. Yeah, lovely. Lovely. Yeah, it's an exquisite piece. It's a short one, but just, this is my earworm right now. I'm just, everywhere I go, I'm just driving, floating around in my car. I'm probably going to get a ticket soon. Nice. Okay, good. I think a German choir. She asked who sang it, and it's a German choir a cappella. You'll notice there's kind of an ooh resonance or a reverb sometimes when you hear beautiful sacred music. It's often sung in a cathedral with no microphone, and the creation of the cathedral, those things were built to help us feel the expansive nature of the sound of God. We don't get that same experience here electronically, that reverb, but if you've ever been in a big church, that's, and you think, God, why did they build these darn things? What a waste of money, blah, blah, blah. The sound is staggering in there, so just enjoy good concerts in there or sing in there and get a feel for that. Next thing I want to do is play you something on my computer and have you watch it. And you can kind of come over and all just crowd around it if you want. It's Cecilia Bartoli singing some Mozart. And Cecilia Bartoli. And it's quite fun. Quite fun. So I'll bring that up. Take me just a minute to get myself connected.
Can you get connected?
I usually can. At least I was this afternoon. There we go. Okay, so I'm on, and there we are, and let's turn this on. Wait, I'm going to wait till everybody comes. Whoever wants to come over, you need to watch this and listen to it. It's not ready yet. I will in just a minute. In fact, I'll make it larger. Well, I'll start playing it. So it's both hearing this, but also seeing the performer, because there's a lot you get from just watching her. Isn't that fabulous?
Fabulous.
I love that. I love that. Oh my gosh. She's Cecilia Bartoli is the rock star of the opera world. She is so gifted. She's been singing like this since she was a young girl. Her mother is a professional opera singer and a trainer. Father is a professional singer. And there's nobody who sings with the joy that she sings with. Look at her face. She was ready to explode. What did you guys feel when you heard her sing?
Imagine myself singing that in the shower, you know?
Oh, yeah.
One of those days when I really need it.
You should. You should. If you guys aren't singing in your shower. Yeah. Yeah, expansiveness. Yeah. Anybody else? Oh, children running in a field. It's true. Chipmunks running in a field. That is adorable. Oh my God. She was channeling an unbelievable amount of energy. Oh my gosh. So if you guys ever need to pick me up, watch it. That's YouTube. Cecilia Bartoli, she's all over YouTube. Buy her CDs, watch her on, and she's a machine gun of a singer.
To see her, not just hear her.
Yeah, it's different. Yeah. Oh. It's fantastic. You know, it's like. Oh, she's like, really is like a machine. No one sings like that. Most people slide through those movements. If you get to the end note, you're good. But she doesn't miss a note anyway. That's and you should sing that in your shower. Learn it and sing it. Okay, I want to hear a recording. Oh, great. How sweet. Okay, I'm going to go back, see if I have anything more to play for you. I think I do have a couple more, and then we're going to do some singing together.
I've passed my life as a stranger, Lord, roamed far in foreign lands, far, Lord, far, too far. Only he is far from home. Only he, Lord, understands. Only he who knows he's far from home feels the earth and understands. Sometimes a stranger did take me in, then love I thought was near. Love, Lord, where is love? As the winds upon the desert sand whisper hope, then disappear. As soft winds breathe on the desert sand, so love sighs, then disappears. Sometimes a child laughed and I did pause, and dreamed of joys at home. Joys, Lord, only a dream. For what joy is there without your smile? Empty like the ocean foam. For what joy is there without your smile? You're the sea, all else is foam. How long must I be a wanderer, Lord? You know where I belong. You know, Lord, yes, you know. Home is where my Lord's sweet presence is. I've grown tired of strangers' songs. Home is where my Lord's sweet presence is. Bless me that I hear your songs.
Okay, who here has never heard that piece before? Are there some people who have never heard that one? That's a piece sung by Swami Kriyananda. It's probably about in the mid-2000s, I think. He recorded it when his voice was in beautiful condition then, younger. And it's probably just about my favorite song. It's I've Passed My Life as a Stranger, Lord. And listening to it is one thing. Someone described Drupada, for those of you who know him, he's a noted Vedic astrologer. He referred to Swami as a master of this chakra. This is the chakra over which he had complete mastery. And sometimes strangers have heard Swami even just speak to them a few words, and they experience healing as a result. There's something coming through Swami's chakra here. And I think it's why God gave him so much music, and he sang and recorded a lot of music, because just listening to it, it can be very healing. But for me personally, singing it is like a whole different universe of experience. So learning the words to something that touches you, and then singing it yourself, just wandering around on maybe a walk around the block, it will take it to a completely different level for you. There's something so powerful and sacred about it, I almost can't put it into words. So I'm just going to say, try it and see what you experience. It's just transformed my consciousness and my life to do it. So, and that's a particularly beautiful piece. Okay. Anybody have anything that they experienced or thought as during the singing of that? Yeah, true renunciate. It's a beautiful song of renunciation, but it's also a song of, hey, I tasted all of that. It didn't quite do it for me. So it was somebody who really went right through all those core life experiences. You know, one time I heard a child laugh, and I did pause and dreamed of joys at home. Joys, Lord, only a dream. What joy is there without your smile? Empty like the ocean foam. I mean, it's just so, you know, it's like, oh, not quite. Almost does it, but not quite. Please. Right. I can't summarize that beautifully enough, but yes, it brings that Swami helps us bring that feeling up, even though the music itself may feel a little bit sad or yearning. Yeah. Yes. Yes, you can't wait to get to the Missouri. Yeah.
Yeah. It's the fact that you're at the Missouri and not at the Shenandoah.
Yeah, I guess that's right.
And there's nowhere to go.
Yeah.
Right? There's no closure.
That's true.
And there's no resolution.
And there's resolution here in the last, you know, in the last paragraph. Yeah, they both deal with wanderlust. That's true. That's a good way of putting it. Lovely. Yeah, it feels like God is there on the other side waiting for you like this. Yeah. Lovely. Okay, what I'd like to do now is let's sing together. Because even if you aren't a good singer or you don't love to sing, it's good for you. In fact, I read it. A book by a medical intuitive recently, Diary of a Medical Intuitive. Maybe some of you have seen that book. It's quite wonderful. Anyway, she said she does readings for people all the time who are incredibly sick, cancer, diabetes, you name it. She said, best thing you can do for your vibration, for your health, your vibration, your energetic pattern is to sing. And I thought that was great advice. We don't usually do it. People are a little shy about singing. It's the most exposed thing that anybody can do is stand up in front of a bunch of people and just open your mouth and start singing. Little kids do it effortlessly, but adults just get all shy and stuff. So I won't look at you. But let's just have some fun together and do some singing. So, and I thought we'd just do some simple chants, because I don't know how many of us know the more complicated music of Swamis, and chanting is way easy. So if you want to sit where you are, that's fine. If you want to sit on the floor, that's fine too. And this singing is a continuation of our class experience. Don't just get into the old chanting mode, but rather as you're singing, see if you feel or notice what you're feeling inside as we do it. Okay. I'm going to pick a couple simple ones so that we don't have to worry too much about the words. I think that's a good key. So this is, Lord, I am thine, be thou mine. As simple as it can get, so we can really focus on what we're feeling.
Be thou mine, oh, be thou mine, oh, be thou mine.
How does singing feel different from listening? Everyone's all so inward, they're now no need to come out unless you want to. That's right, you're generating a vibration yourself. So it has power.
It starts central.
Yes, that's true, and it starts within. Yeah. Yeah, this is what's so fun about the human voice is that you can generate from within yourself sound that can change your consciousness.
There's something very personal touching.
Personal, touching, inward, yes, all of those things. Yeah, you're more engaged in a way when you're singing, I think. Not true for all of us, because some of that music we heard before was also affecting, but still different. Yeah. Nice. Well, a lot of you are already meditating. That's really sweet. I don't want to drag you out of that. I'm going to play one last chant. This is a more yearning chant. We don't often sing this one. If you don't know the words easily, you'll pick them up pretty fast. But you'll see it has a different flavor than what we just sang. This is one of my favorites, too. I think I like all the sad stuff, and I can't tell you why. Or the more longing stuff, let's put it that way. But you'll find that the music that you tend to like, it vibrates with you. It's your personal collection. This is my personal collection. Those of you who know this one, sing along with me. In the valley of sorrow, 1,000 years or till tomorrow. In the valley of sorrow, 1,000 years or till tomorrow. But I'll wait to see only you. Just you, my Lord, I want to see only you, 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 just you. My heart's aflame, my soul's afire, my heart's aflame, my soul's afire, just for you, 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 just you. My Lord, I want to see only you, 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 just you. In the valley of sorrow, 1,000 years or till tomorrow. In the valley of sorrow, 1,000 years or till tomorrow. But I want to see only you. My Lord, I want to see only you, 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 just you. My heart's aflame, my soul's afire, my heart's aflame, my soul's afire, just for you.
You.
like to close by referring you to this beautiful quote of Masters up on the board here. Because man is an expression of the creative word that is God, sound has the most potent and immediate effect on him, offering a way to remembrance of his divine origin. God manifests in the world as vibration, among many other things, and vibration being, for us, being sound, sound being a way for us to access that vibration. And I read a remarkably interesting thing about Master, someone who worked closely with him, Durgamata, was sitting near his feet one day, and she heard the sound of Om coming out of the bottoms of his feet. And she looked at him in with a questioning look, and he nodded to indicate that she had heard rightly. And what that said to me is that if we calm the static of our minds and our consciousness enough, then God, the creative word of God, can flow through us more freely and vibrate through us more freely. And so, and that's something just remarkable to contemplate. So may you have fun in your adventures with music and sound, using it as a way to increase and uplift your consciousness. And thank you all very much for your time.
If anybody does have a cell phone, this would be a good time to turn it off. And I'll just stand off. Maybe I'll go here. How's that? That works? Okay. So, happy to see you all. I know almost everybody, maybe everybody. My name is Stephen Maness. And our topic for the rest of the evening is light. It's a really good topic. Sound and light go together. They go hand in hand. I don't know, you know, I wasn't here last week, and as you know, this is a series about the eight aspects of God. And the idea here, of course, is that we can experience God's presence in eight distinct ways. When I first learned about this concept, it was a revelation to me. I mean, I didn't know much about God to begin with, but I found it so helpful to know when I was experiencing God's presence, right? It's like, how do you know? And there it was on a sheet of paper in the most literal sense. Oh, if you experience this, that, and that, you know that you're experiencing God's presence. So it's very meaningful. It's very meaningful for those of us who are looking for something that's, it makes the intangible more tangible. Larry was mentioning, and I only overheard this. I'm not saying this to embarrass him at all, but just about this idea. This was when we were sitting in the room, and it's a very valid idea of wanting to have some experience of God. I mean, it's a yearning for those of us who want more in our lives to really know that we have God, or God is paying attention to us, or God is with us. It's a pretty sure indication that at least God's presence is accessible. I was listening to a class of Asha Prayers recently. She tells a lot of really good stories about Swami Kriyananda. For those who don't know, Asha's classes are available for free download on the Ananda Palo Alto website. And she has done many series, book series of books that were written by Swami Kriyananda, Yogananda. And I found them to be a treasure trove of vibrational experiences that she transmits. And it's been very, very helpful for me. You may find it also. She talked about Swami Kriyananda. When he was a boy, he would go to sleep in a particular way, where he would basically open himself up to the divine light, and it would filter through him and, in essence, take him away to that plane of sleep. And as a boy, he didn't understand that this was an unusual experience. He simply thought, this is the way people go to sleep. And he found out subsequently it's not the way that most people go to sleep. What was more interesting to me was that he spoke of an experience that he had with Yogananda years later. So he went from being this boy who was very, very open. He had come in with a lot of experience of this nature, being very, very open as a child, and then shutting it off because he, for a variety of reasons, he needed to ground himself in this plane, this earth plane. And we'll talk about the distinction between the earth plane and what we can call the light plane, because that's really what we're talking about tonight. When he had an experience with Yogananda, when he met Yogananda and Yogananda blessed him, he went back to that same place, he said, of the divine presence as light. And interestingly enough, he said that it was as if no time had passed. And this really got my attention, because we are here in this temporal world. One of the characteristics of this earth plane is that we are often subject to this concept of the passage of time. I mean, nobody can really escape it, unless we learn how to relate to God through, and conveniently we can, through one or more of these aspects, and therefore transcend that limiting aspect of this plane, which is time. I personally had a couple of experiences, and, you know, we don't really talk about experiences around here. Master was pretty clear, Swami's been pretty clear, it's not what we're here for. Nonetheless, it can be, if something happens, it can be very helpful if we use it in a helpful way, which is different than saying, wow, this was so fantastic, and I must be so developed in order to experience something like this, right? Which presumably some people do. But regardless, I came onto this path 22 years ago, and I had these a set of parallel experiences in a very short time, and I think God really knew he needed to hit me twice on the head, knowing my particular propensities. And, you know, there's truth to that in the sense that we can stray. A lot of people stick around for years or decades, and then they just go off somewhere else because it isn't as meaningful as it was, or it doesn't feel as fresh as it was. It's not as new as it was. We benefit by guarding against that. One of the ways that we can guard against that is to continually tune in to these aspects of God's presence. So in my case, it was an experience of light, and it was very poignant. It was just, you know, it just sort of, I was sitting in a Sunday service, and all of a sudden, I was somewhere else, briefly. But it really got my attention, and I knew it was true, because it had to do with this perception at the spiritual eye. So here we have a painting by Swami Kriyananda that he did as a young man, and this was his visual experience of the spiritual eye, or his representation of it, probably more accurately. We have it up here as well. We talk about the spiritual eye, but I want to give us a sense of its meaning to us personally, because it is God, we experience God in a personal way, and it can be so helpful to have that personal touch, which is something we can do with the spiritual eye. So here's the basic premise. The idea of God in this form is that there is a field of blue surrounded by a ring of gold, and within that field of blue is centered a five-pointed star. Now, one can pierce that star. You can actually get to the other side. It's a barrier of sorts, but it's not an impenetrable barrier. By the power of concentration or the grace of God or both, we can pierce it. And this was the nature of my experience, that I got a very small taste of the possibilities. Right, that's so much of what it's about. It's so enticing that we want more. Now, the last time this happened was 21 years ago. I thought it was going to happen more often, frankly. Happened once, a few months later, and I thought, this is great. Well, 21 years. I presumably have more work to do. Right? We all do. And also, Master said that the experiences themselves, as sweet as they are not necessary. They're not an indication that we're that much closer to samadhi. We don't need them. Maybe some of us do need them to keep us going, but we don't need them in order to give us a trail marker to tell us how far we are along the path, right? Other things come. And in the truest sense, you know, Asha talks about 10-year periods. You know, instead of being so immersed in, am I making progress, thinking about a 10-year period and then perhaps looking back and saying, oh my goodness, I really have made quite a bit of progress. Because, I mean, one of the things that I use as a barometer is how people are responding to me. I'm not so good at looking at my own behavior and getting a perspective on it. But I do notice the way people respond to me. And ideally, after a 10-year period or two or three or four or five, people are responding to us in a way that indicates that what is flowing through us is of upliftment to them. Right? That's what we're talking about here. We're talking about the ability to, if an experience is of benefit, it is going to offer upliftment through us. Very simple concept Yogananda spoke of. The instrument is blessed by that which flows through it. We're the instrument, what's flowing through us. We're blessed when we have these aspects of God flowing through us. And really, as important is the blessing that others receive. God's blessing through us. That's why we're here. We are here to be channels, instruments of light, of upliftment to the world. Yogananda said, if you want to change the world, change yourself. Actually, Sri Yukteswar said that. If you want to change the world, change yourself. How do we change ourselves? One of the surest ways of changing ourselves is to attune ourselves to that divine presence in these various forms. Okay, so that's the groundwork. I want to point to two books. One of these books is called Om, the Melody of Love by Nayaswami Bharat. It is a wonderful book. What I'm going to do some reading tonight. It's from this book and it's from this book, which is The Promise of Immortality. This is by Swami Kriyananda. I think it's really an often overlooked book. It's an absolute treasure. These are passages from the Bible and Bhagavad Gita, but he goes into it in such a way that he really focuses on these aspects of God. It's quite amazing. And Om, the Melody of Love, is about Om, the cosmic vibration. Karen introduced us to this concept of the cosmic vibration. That is it has many aspects, but we know it as the sound of Om, which is this deep resonance. She talked about the example of Yogananda having the power of Om flowing through his feet, and Durgamata, a very advanced disciple, being so closely attuned to him, feeling it vibrationally. I'll just put these down. This is what Bharat writes. He said, you can experience Om without hearing its vibratory sounds because divine spirit has created many vibrations. Okay, so that's, the first is cosmic vibration, which manifests as sound and light. So these concepts that we're introducing tonight of sound and light are deeply intertwined. They don't stand alone as aspects of God's presence. In fact, they're two sides of the same coin. This idea of Om is that when the world was created, when God thought this world into existence, it had to be, if it was going to manifest physically, it had to transform itself from something quite ethereal to something more substantial. And there is a progression of that creation. In the process of that progression, there was a vibration that was started. That's how this came into existence. It was initially through thought form, and that thought form began to vibrate. And ultimately, it made its imprint in a variety of ways which still exist. One of the ways in which that still exists is through sound. So the vibration of Om, you can think of in a number of ways, one of which is, it is the actual sound that was created by that initial vibration that continues to reverberate throughout the universe. We know about the Big Bang through science. Science is coming around to these deep spiritual principles, which are known as Sanatana Dharma or eternal truths. The Big Bang resulted in a sound. That sound, the vibration of Om, has been infused into every particle of creation. Everything has Om within it. All of the cells, all of the subatomic particles that make up this arm or this chair or this window are infused. Therefore, we ourselves are infused with it. So much of the spiritual path is really about awakening to our true nature. And because of the confusing world in which we find ourselves, we lose touch with that true nature. The principles that we talk about in a class like this, and even more particularly the practices that Yogananda brought, are designed to help us reconnect with our true nature. The Om is very powerful. So if we think of the Om not only as sound, but also as light, because the two are intertwined. When God created the world, first came the sound, immediately thereafter came the light. They were intertwined. Right? This is what the Bible tells us. Yogananda talks about this particular passage and many others as being the true teaching, Sanatana Dharma. So light came into existence as part of this vibration. Therefore, light infuses us, or light, we have the opportunity to be infused in a very similar fashion by divine light, just as we can be infused by divine sound when we find the pathway that leads us back to it. Okay. So I want to read something else. So he continues. So what he said is the first divine vibration is cosmic vibration. So that's what I was referring to when the cosmos was created, which manifests as sound and light. The secondary vibrations are the other six aspects of the divine that we're talking about in this class. First came sound and light. The secondary vibrations are cosmic love, wisdom, power, peace, joy, and calmness. And of course, we'll go through all of them in the class. All religious truths and experiences are centered in cosmic Om. When you feel divine inspiration in the form of cosmic joy, for example, you are experiencing holy Om. So we can think of holy Om, sound and light, as being the umbrella beneath which all of these other divine aspects exist. And it's up to us to, you know, cover ourselves with that umbrella. We can do it. My intent and hope for tonight is that we'll have the ability to experience that personally. So I'm going to read, I'll talk a little bit, and then we'll do a guided visualization short meditation. Back and forth, back and forth. If all goes well, there will be a deepening progression. By the end of the evening, we'll be able to say, ah, that's what this is about. So we'll see what happens. Okay. Read something else. So we know in the book Essence of Self-Realization, there's one chapter on the eight aspects of God, and this is what Yogananda spoke, that Kriyananda wrote down for that book. To experience God, to experience him as light during meditation brings calmness to the mind, purifying it and giving it clarity. The more deeply one contemplates the inner light, the more one perceives as things the more one contemplates the inner light, the more one perceives all things as made of that light. So the more one contemplates the inner light, which is done here, we'll do some of that tonight, the more one contemplates that inner light, the more one perceives that all things are made of that light. As we deepen our perception that all things are made of that light, we attune ourselves to that cosmic vibration, and our life changes. It's not an exaggeration to say our life changes. That's what this is about. It's about, it really is a shortcut in the most positive sense, not skipping steps, but simply going in the proper way to our depth, to understand intuitively who we are. Right? And what we're made of. And when it's so satisfying, that's the interesting part. It's innately satisfying. Even a glimpse, even a moment, presumably even a nanosecond of it, resonates so deeply with us, we do not forget. My little experiences that I had some number of years ago are so vivid to me because they're that direct pathway. All the rest of this is confusion in comparison. Even though so much of this seems nice, and at times it is quite nice, nonetheless, the other is so much deeper, and it's like a wormhole, right? You have this wormhole that all of a sudden takes you God knows how many zillions of miles away, but that's through here, right? So we don't have to do anything but go here. That's what this represents, a field of blue surrounded by a ring of gold with a white five-pointed star in the center. We can penetrate that star, and we can experience what is beyond it. Whether we do that in actuality, or we simply visualize it, or we imagine it, it will take us in that direction. My experience on the spiritual path has been that when I am not able to do something, or it seems confusing to me, I try to imagine it happening. And I have found that that imagining often leads me in an appropriate way to a place where, to more of a launching off place, where I can have some level of more tangible experience. So the power of imagination, when applied in these directions, is immensely powerful. It ties into this idea of that Yogananda gave us of how we attract God into our lives, how it's really how we draw on the grace of God. He talked about the spiritual path itself being like a circle. And if we cut that circle in half, he said 50% of it is all about God's grace coming to us and taking us there, basically. And then there's the other half. 25% of it is the grace of the guru. 25% of it, that is of our spiritual advancement, is our responsibility. Now, within that 25%, we have to give it our all. And it's by giving it our all that we draw on the power of the guru and the grace of God. This is something very similar that we're talking about here. As we make the effort to tune in, we draw on this great power. Next week, the section that I'll talk about in this class is power, and I'll go into it more deeply. But we're drawing on divine power, and divine power takes many forms, one of which is light. Okay, so getting the idea here of really why we would even want to tune in to the spiritual eye, why we would benefit from the appearance of that light within us. This is something Swami Kriyananda said about the eight aspects. He said, the eight attributes or vibrations rarely, if ever, appear all at once. They resemble, rather, the facets of a diamond. Each is presented at the right moment and to the right person. Meditators usually feel themselves attracted to one attribute or another and are therefore more likely to experience that attribute in themselves. So we go, it's very helpful to know that we can go with our own nature. If we're drawn to calmness, if we're drawn to peace, if we're drawn to light, if we're drawn to joy, that's what will resonate with us. So these are the facets of the diamond. The higher stages of meditation entail progressively deeper absorption into one attribute or another until the soul expands to become all of them. That one could conceivably say would be a state of samadhi where we are one with all of creation, ultimately one with all of creation. At the highest stages of samadhi, samadhi being the ultimate union with the divine, that is, we've merged into the infinite, we experience all of these aspects of God because we are one with all of these aspects of God, and we've fully realized our nature at that point. Okay. I'm just going to briefly go over something here. There's this famous quote from the Bible from Jesus, "If thine eye be single, thy whole body shall be full of light," from the book of Matthew. If thine eye be single, thy whole body shall be full of light. This is the eye to which he was referring, the spiritual eye. When we are fully concentrating here, our whole body will be full of light, because that's when we will realize what we are made of. Now, we don't have to wait until we're in a high state of samadhi to experience that. We'll go through some visualizations this evening very shortly that ideally will give us a taste of that. But the whole concept is, it's not a visual experience as we know a visual experience to be. We get so confused in our lives because we live very often, and I'd say this would be true of all of us in this room, we live primarily through our senses. And our energies are directed outwardly. We come into this world, and Yogananda even talked about the little baby immediately reaching outward, right? It's just our nature. As soon as we come into this body, this identification with the body is very strong, and we begin to reach outward because in our physical state, we're in a physical world, and we perceive the physical world as offering satisfaction if we only reach far enough, right, or in the right way. And this is what we do a lot. And gradually, we learn that there's greater opportunity inside. And we begin, as Yogananda said, to reverse the searchlights of the senses. So the senses, you can think of this tremendous energy that's flowing through us, to which we have access because it's flowing through the universe. It's flowing outward down the spine and out through the senses. And these searchlights, tremendous power. By employing these practices, and particularly by focusing our awareness at this point between the eyebrows, we create a magnetism that reverses those searchlights because that magnetism draws the energy inward and up the spine. So less of it is going out. This is a gradual process. But that tremendous light that is going outward, when it comes inside, helps us to be filled with light, as Jesus talked about, right? It's not in the literal sense of taking light from out there and bringing it inside. It's because the distractions are fewer that the true inner light is becoming clearer, right? The smoke is clearing out a little bit. So this light that's blazing within us or wanting to come out is obscured. So much of it is unavailable to us for a variety of reasons, one of which we may not even know it's there, but also because our thoughts and what Yogananda called the thwarting cross currents of energy keep us from perceiving. Our perception is outward, our focus is outward, our desires are outward, and we're clouded. It's like a cloudy day. We live in a cloudy day. And when we step into the sun, we realize there's a whole other world that's available to us, but that world is inside. This is something that Swami wrote in the Promise of Immortality. He said, "The Bible repeatedly describes the inner light as appearing eastward in the forehead." So this, you know, in the story of the three wise men is that they saw a star in the east. This idea of eastward. So he said, this can only be what Jesus intended by coming out to the east. East in mystical writing is situated in the forehead. Here it is that the divine light is first seen. North in the body is the top of the head. South is the base of the spine. West, the back of the head. The light of the body is the single or spiritual eye, visible between the eyebrows, when the mind is calm and at rest. Visible between the eyebrows when the mind is calm and at rest. In meditation, this light enters the brain and after a time fills the whole body. And I just want to get to one line. He talks about Jesus using the concept of lightning. So he said, Jesus, his description of lightning doesn't depict the way lightning strikes. He said Jesus was describing the suddenness of the Christ light as it dawns upon the mind. So just as the clouds part and suddenly the sun is so apparent to us, within us, the suddenness of the Christ light dawns upon the mind. And he said this is not even a metaphysical statement, but it's actually physical in nature. Which really means it's that much more accessible to us. Because as souls in these physical bodies, we tend to be physically oriented. And this is really a treat, because if it is a physical process, that means it's that much easier for us to access, and this is what we're going to try right now. So let's close our eyes, and I want to give us a little taste of this. Let's just sit in a meditative position, whatever that is for you. Feet flat on the ground if you're in a chair, cross-legged is fine, on the floor, of course. Eyes closed, and let's get a sense of that point between the eyebrows. If you've not experienced that place, think of yourself standing at the ocean on a cliff looking out towards the sea. And you'll notice, of course, the sky is above and the sea is below. There's a horizon line between the two. So if we're on that cliff staring out and seeing a horizon line, if we move our eyes ever so gently above that imaginary horizon line, we're now energetically focusing at the point between the eyebrows, at the spiritual eye. It's a very subtle shift. No strain, no effort in the truest sense that it's not physical. It is more of an energetic lift. But once there, we want to use our energy and focus very, very deeply. If we're straining at all physically, let's pull back a little bit and just reorient ourselves and come back for another pass. And I'll guide us through this. This is from Yogananda. Close your eyes. Relax your body and mind. Concentrate on the ball of darkness that surrounds you. Feel this ball. Then imagine or feel it filled with the vibration of Om, that deep resonant vibration of sound and light. Imagine the ball of darkness and vibration becoming as big as the earth. Then expand the ball of vibration to the distant stars, galaxies, and all space. Feel and hear Om emanating from every atom in creation. Fill this infinite ball of vibration with the consciousness of bliss, unceasing watchfulness, with attention equally concentrated everywhere. The consciousness of immortality, knowledge, peace, and all-pervading energy and life energy. Remain identified with this highest awareness as long as you can, as often as you can. Then God will be real to you, and you will find him, his conscious guidance in everything. Let's just sit for a moment with that awareness. Remain identified with this highest awareness as long as you can, as often as you can. Then God will be real to you, and you will find his conscious guidance in everything. Let's continue with eyes closed. I'm going to read something and we'll go into the next visualization. Swami Kriyananda says, the inner light has power to affect transformation. The sudden awakening suggested by the image of lightning requires much preliminary work, a work not outward, but inward. It is a process of inner purification. Outward service is beneficial also to those who serve God and others, for it purifies their hearts of selfish desires. The inner light, when it comes, heralds a higher state of consciousness. The higher this state, the more complete the inner change. In time, that light blazes as of a million suns, as it is described in the Indian scriptures. Even ordinary human beings, long before they even see the inner light, use light as a metaphor for any sort of mental awakening. This is a meditation on the sun rays. Imagine how the sun rays sometimes shine down through the clouds. So think of a cloud of your own ignorance, or perhaps a cloud that hangs over this world of human darkness and human egotism and ambition. Think of the sun rays piercing downward through this cloud into the dark veil of this world. And then think of yourself as rising with those rays, rising up from this darkness, rising up through the clouds, bursting through them into this blazing light of the sun that is behind these clouds. Feel that there you are in communion with God's light, and that that light is speaking to you, that you are absorbing yourself into that light. Swami talks about this idea of manifestation and the way the world was created. I want to read a little something, and I'll say a couple things about it. He said, As sunlight on entering the ocean loses power at increasing depths and finally becomes invisible. So sunlight entering the ocean, as you get deeper, it becomes invisible. He said, so with the divine light as it enters human consciousness. Many of the creatures that live at great depths produce a luminescence of their own to compensate for the absence of outer light. Even so, the delusion-darkened ego of ourselves produces its own version of spiritual awareness by the excitement it generates in its relation to matter. So this is our own effort to generate sparks within us, right? The true light is perceived here. We're in physical bodies experiencing the world through our senses, and therefore, it's interesting. What he's really saying, if I understand it correctly, is innately we know where we're going. We're going towards the light. We're designed. It's infused within us, right? If every particle of creation has that divine presence within us and we are made of those particles, that is our nature. We have an intuitive sense of that nature. We may not be conscious of it. Many, many people are not conscious. It takes us a lot of lifetimes to get to this point where we have some interest in these matters, even. Nonetheless, it's imprinted within us. So when we're living in this physical body, in a physical orientation, he's saying we are somehow remembering light is our nature, and we're trying to create it within us because we can't perceive it in the truest form. That's what these sensory experiences are about for us. We're grasping at straws in reality. It's a feeble effort. It's the best we can do, but it's a feeble effort ultimately because it doesn't lead to lasting satisfaction. That's one of the chapters in The Essence of Self-Realization, from which this whole concept of this class came, is the folly of materialism, right? The folly of materialism, it's not just that money doesn't buy you happiness. That's part of it, but there's much more to it. The materialism is the idea that we are so engrossed in this physical material plane that we look to find our ultimate happiness through it. It's folly, Yogananda is saying. It's just folly because it doesn't lend itself to that. The great irony is that this planet and this whole universe was simply created to give us an arena that enables us to come back to our true home in God. We get so enraptured with what's actually happening here, but it's a sideshow. It's all a sideshow. And this idea of us generating the electricity is one way that we're trying to work our way out of that sideshow. So he says, people's awareness darkens as their awareness becomes denser with matter identification. This indeed is the way cosmic creation is manifested. From spirit, the most ethereal, this is the way the world is created, and all creation, in fact, follows the same pattern. From spirit to divine ideation, that is an idea, formless spirit had an idea, to light and energy, to the seeming substantiality of matter, right? That's where we are. And from sattva-guna, that is that most elevating quality that we're reaching toward, to rajo-guna, the activating quality that we use to move us in a direction, to tamoguna, which is the spiritually darkening, dense quality which we get caught up in over and over again that brings us down. And our spiritual efforts really help us rise above this gravitational pull of tamoguna, tamo meaning just darkening energy, using our rajasic nature. That is, we employ energy in order to move from darkness to light. That's really the concept here. We employ energy to move from darkness, which pulls us down, to light, which ultimately will allow us to escape the darkness. Energy, which itself displays light, appears dark as matter. The more a person identifies himself with the material plane, the less he experiences the spiritual light. Okay, that's the groundwork. We know this. Around the bodies of saints, he goes on to say, and especially around their heads, spiritually sensitive persons often see an astral light or an aura. Okay. Around people of lower awareness, the light becomes progressively dim. The aura, even when bright, is invisible to most people. Even as to them, the light in their own foreheads is invisible. In other words, until our perceptions are sharpened enough, we neither perceive the light of others nor the light that is within us. The effects of that light can easily be inferred from the way it acts through the human brain. Accompanying it ever increasingly as the inner light develops is a corresponding clarity of mind. So this can be thought of perhaps as a guidepost along the way. An ever-increasing clarity of mind gives us a sense that we're making progress spiritually because our perceptions are clarified and our perception of light will be clarified in that process. The person deeply identified with matter finds it difficult to think clearly or even sometimes to think at all. People completely identified with our bodies consider the senses and sense pleasures the be-all and end-all of existence. So we're better than that. We know more than that. We've experienced more than that. We can relate to it because at times we go there still. Right? We have those days, we have those moments, and we certainly are aware of other people who are more immersed in it. I want to lead us through the next visualization, which is really designed to help us sort of transcend that gap between that lack of awareness and that greater awareness. Because if we're coming from a place of greater awareness, we have also innate a desire to spread that light to others and to reach out to them. I was listening today to a talk that Asha gave, one of the classes, and she was talking about Swami, and I'm paraphrasing here. He was saying that you are truly happy when you only want to make others as happy as you are. So that's the ultimate sign of happiness, that you only want to make others as happy as you are. And I thought that's just so beautiful. And it's the same concept, because we just want to share whatever we have. And the clearer we are in what we have, the more naturally we want to share it. So let's take a moment now. We'll close our eyes and we'll go through this visualization. It's called extending light from your heart to infinity. Meditate on rays of light extending outward from your heart and expanding to infinity. And then, not only expanding to infinity, but in the process of expansion, blessing all creatures and souls everywhere, touching them with light so that they no longer live in darkness. They no longer walk in darkness, but walk in the divine protection of God's light. I'm going to read that again. Meditate on rays of light extending outward from your heart and expanding to infinity. And then not only expanding to infinity, but in the process of expansion, blessing all creatures, all souls everywhere, touching them with light so that they no longer live in darkness. They no longer walk in darkness, but walk in the divine protection of God's light. We'll take a moment with that. You can open your eyes if you feel to. I'll continue. He said, the English language is fortunate in the way it treats the word light. I found this so intriguing. It contains two meanings for light. The first is the one we've been using, which is the opposite of darkness. The second meaning pertains to lightness of weight. This coincidence is fortunate in that it expresses a truth everyone knows. The more light in a person's consciousness, the more light-weighted he also feels. Not in pounds or kilos, but in awareness. Influences that increase this sense of lightness increase the mind's receptivity to the visible light. I'll read that again. Influences that increase this sense of lightness increase also the mind's receptivity to the visible light. Talks about heavy foods making us heavy in consciousness. Too much sleep darkens the mind, results in a sluggish thinking process. Alcoholic beverages, sexual indulgence, darkening the mind. These physical experiences, these heavy physical experiences, pull us down. When we're pulled down, we're pulled away from the light. All activity, in fact, that absorbs one in materiality and that lessens one's spiritual awareness obscures the mind, reducing its clarity. The spiritual reason for moral living, then, is that it lightens the consciousness, loosens the shackles of ego and matter consciousness, and attunes one more sensitively to the redeeming inner light. Okay. Let's close our eyes again. This is called a snowfall of light. Think of a snowfall of light. During a normal snowfall, you can see snowflakes falling, white and beautiful. But now think of the snowflakes as little points of light. Now those lights grow thicker, becoming a blizzard, so that all light is swirling around you, landing everywhere, and making the whole world full of light. Jesus said, if therefore thine eye be single, the whole body shall be filled with light. And it says in the Old Testament that he came by way of the east, and the earth shone with his glory. See the light settling on everything, covering the world around you with radiant beauty. Not just white like a snowfall, but covering everything with light. Think of that light as being your own self. The light surrounds you until finally the blizzard of light becomes so intense that only light is bathing you, purifying you, lifting you out of all pettiness and ego into freedom. I'll lead us now through the last part. You can continue with eyes closed. Absorption in the light comes not by passivity, nor can it be forcefully commandeered. It comes at last, however, by steadfast, deep devotion. Most important of all is an attitude of loving receptivity toward the Christ consciousness through that one whom God has ordained as your true guru, in our case, Yogananda. As we saw earlier in the Bible, Kriyananda says, as many as received him, to them gave he the power to become the sons of God. And as the Bhagavad Gita states, on those who are ever united to me through meditation and who worship me with love, I confer that yoga of wisdom by which they attain me. I then, who dwell in their hearts, showering my grace upon them, dispel forever their darkness born of ignorance, and uplift them in the shining light of wisdom. And our final visualization for the evening. This is a visualization for merging into the spiritual eye. Concentrate at the point between the eyebrows. Visualize there a tunnel of golden light. Mentally enter that tunnel and feel yourself surrounded by a glorious sense of happiness and freedom. As you move through the tunnel, feel yourself bathed by the light until all worldly thoughts disappear. After soaring through the tunnel as long as you feel to do so, visualize before you a curtain of deep violet-blue light. Pass through that curtain into another tunnel of deep violet-blue light. Feel the light surrounding you. Slowly the tunnel walls disappear in blue light. Expand your consciousness into that light, into infinite freedom and bliss. Now there is no tunnel. There is only the all-encompassing blueness and bliss of infinity. At last, visualize before you a silvery white five-pointed star of light. Mentally spread out your arms and legs, assuming with your body the shape of that star. Give yourself to it in body, mind, and soul as you surrender every thought, every feeling to absolute self-existing bliss. Bliss cascades gently over you like a waterfall of mist, filling your heart with ineffable peace. We'll sit for a couple of minutes in silence.
So, I often experience amazing light in the world. I mean, very deep, meaningful, just sometimes just as simple as noticing the sky or the greenness of trees or whatever. I think what's hard for me, and I've tried to figure out a way to make this happen, is how to be able to somehow bring those experiences inward. For me, it's much harder to visualize light within me, though I sometimes can visualize the spiritual eye and I can go somewhere in that direction. But I have to say that the experiences I have in the material plane are like very powerful and meaningful. So I sometimes just don't know what to do with that. So if anyone wants to comment on that.
It's perfectly fine.
It's wonderful.
You're not doing anything wrong. Are they mostly?
No, I don't think of it as wrong, no, but I just think of it as it's very engaging. It's very wonderful. It's very meaningful to me. Whereas to sit still, which is a big issue for me, to sit still in meditation and actually visualize or experience light is much, much harder. I don't know if that's true for anyone else.
Yeah, it is for me. Yeah, I have a restless nature, and I have challenges sitting quietly for great lengths of time, sometimes even for small lengths of time. So I can relate to that. Are the experiences you have mostly in nature? Yeah, I think it's a wonderful way to relate to God. I mean, really, it's a gift. It's a gift because it's so tangible.
I think that one of the ways you could use that, Sharmila, and all of us, if that's the case, if it's easier outside, which it is for many of us. I mean, you know, the truth is, even in this community, that is, the whole path is based on a practice of meditation. The vast majority of us have trouble meditating. So, I mean, that's just simply the truth. When you sit and talk to people one by one by one, you realize that's a goal, it's where we're headed, but it's challenging. I think if the practice can then become consciously to see God in everything, as many moments as you can, and that's not just the throwaway line. I mean, it really becomes a practice. I'm looking at God in the tree. I'm looking at God in the rock. I don't know if some of you remember when I came back from, now it's almost 2 years ago, I did a 1 month seclusion. It doesn't sound like a lot when you say it, but it was a lot. I was completely unplugged. And I began that practice. I would look at the wave, and over time, I quit seeing the thing. And I was seeing God everywhere. I mean, having an experience which culminated in that experience that I shared when the deer and I went for a walk. And we just did not see each other as other, because I was seeing God, and that deer must have been also seeing God, because we just took a walk together. It was remarkable, actually. The minute I started seeing it as a deer, it had to leave. And I think that's very telling. So if we can make our practice not in nature, as we look at people. I mean, this is really how Brother Lawrence and Frank Laubach and all these great mystics, what they did First they said, let me think of God once an hour. Then let me think of God five times an hour. Then let me, and they just did a progression until everything coalesced. And what they were seeing is the divine. So I would say, make use of that then. Just don't fight it, but go deeply into it.
Because, you know, one of the beauties of nature is the light. You know, it's just, yeah. You're at the ocean, you're in the forest, that shaft of light comes through. Yeah, all of it. It's so meaningful. Right? I think it's the same experience, you know, ultimately. And then I'm presuming the rest comes. I'm hoping. But I hear that it does.
There was a charming video that Sai Ganesh shared with some people about a yogi living in India. It's a 3-minute thing on YouTube, I think. And he was talking about how if you listen to the trees, and he just walked over and he put his hand on a tree and he was just loving it. He said, the trees are always speaking to us. If you listen to the trees, you will always know what to do in your life, and you will always be healthy. Something very interesting like that. And his energy was, he was holding a little dog, he was strolling around in his backyard, and this was in India, and all around him was the noise of traffic and honking, and he was just so charming. And I felt somehow in his energy that it was possible to just be so, with your antenna up like that, listening, when you're out in nature like that, to hear what a tree or something might have to say to you, that maybe it will speak back to you. So anyway, that was just a beautiful idea.
You know, Karen reminded me, that is a charming video. Actually, I could send it on to people, but I think it was George Washington Carver, but somebody correct me if you know, who said, if you love anything enough, it will speak to you. And that was either Luther Burbank or George Washington.
It was Carver, yeah.
I think it was George Washington Carver. So, I mean, I think these are not, you know, the whole point of this for all of us in our everyday life, because, you know, we're listening to, I mean, Karen did it through experience, and we could really feel it. Stephen was doing it through words and experience and some extraordinary words of Swamiji's that you read that, you know, you just want to stop with every word because it's just pregnant with truth, each word of Swamiji's. But how do we get there? We get there by starting these very seemingly small practices. That's exactly what it is, and this theme keeps coming up recently. As I was talking about at my service, Asha was writing about it in her letters. Davy and I just ran a women's workshop up at the village. It just came up constantly. We're all waiting for something so magnanimous. We're expecting it to be so huge that we never think we're the ones who are there. And we forget that it's in a small, you know, like look at a tree and stop and remember to really love that tree. That is the science of yoga. That is the practice. It's just, we're just waiting for something that's just beyond our reach instead of realizing how absolutely right within our reach it is. And this is really important. You know, I keep wanting to say it's not a throwaway. It's very important because we can all move so much forward, so far forward on this path by doing these smaller things, just like Master said. Take care of the minutes and forget the incarnations. You know, the incarnations will take care of themselves. It's in the minutes. So it's doing just this. It's looking for light. It's paying attention to sound, noticing how it affects us, noticing what sound we want to be near, what sound we want to get away from, what helps us feel heart wide open or contracted, and same with what helps us feel light or dark. Just developing an awareness that we do by these simple little practices take us down that road.
I have never officially heard Om that I know of, but like right now, I am hearing what kind of sounds like static. I mentioned it to Asha once, and she said, oh, that's the beginning of Om. I mean, do you have any comments about that? Anybody? Because I'm hearing it right now, and it just sounds like electrical static.
It's good.
Could be. All right. Okay. No, I wanted to just say, what?
I'm sorry, for just 1 minute, Stephen has his Jewish humor brevity that I love. I do want to comment on that, because I think Swamiji didn't say this to me, but another very great spiritual teacher actually said to me, if you can take any sound in the universe, because what Stephen was saying, and it's true, every sound emanates from universal consciousness. It's impossible not to. Everything's energy vibrating at different frequencies. So we can listen to that siren right now. If we took every one of those sounds and chose to hear it as one small aspect of Om and really focused on it, then the culmination of all the sounds in the world, and literally of the world, really do become Om. You know, Vasudeva was a guy, many people in this room knew him. He was with Ananda for years and years. He died now, many years ago already. But he helped us open the first East-West bookstore. And he was a very deep meditator, very deep. But you could come out of a meditation and there would be a sound, and he would say, I didn't hear a sound. I was only hearing Om. The traffic, the kids, whatever it was that was bothering anybody else, Vasudeva used to say, like, what sound? You know, because he really had developed that practice of hearing everything as Om. And if we assume that, then we quit experiencing other.
Oh, I think it's also talking about sound. I have to be very careful what kind of music I listen to. And because I always have a chant or some sort of music going in my head. I mean, that's just what happens. So it's something that I try to pay attention to, because it's very, it's just really important to me. And tonight was very special too, but music that I used to like to listen to when I was younger, I try not to and don't.
Karen, would you comment on that a little bit? I mean, really, the music we surround ourselves with.
I'm pretty easygoing about this sort of thing, because everybody resonates so differently with different kinds of music. So the experience you had tonight of music, what you felt, just take that with you and enjoy your own discriminative process with it. And as you turn on the radio and listen to music, see where it takes you. And over time, you may decide, hey, you know, that music is great, but it's taking my energy in a direction that maybe I don't want to go. I'll be in my car sometimes and I'll be restless and I'll turn on NPR and I'll start listening to the news. And in about 1.5 minutes, I'm so worried and tense and, oh my God, what's going to happen? I can't do a darn thing about what it is I'm listening to. So each time, it's like sticking your finger in the flame on the stove, and I think, ooh, you dope, what were you doing that for? And gradually over time, you know, we just begin to learn what's good for us and what's not good for us. So I don't like denying myself anything, because I really like to just bong, remember, oh yeah, that's why I don't do that anymore.
I have to say, I love what you said tonight when you put that first piece on, which I remember, some of you may not know, but I won a dance contest on American Bandstand when I was on national television. I was a big dancer, but I danced to that song a lot. But you know, even now, I love that you didn't put it on and say this is bad. You said something that was so important. You know, everything depends on where our energy is when we start. So what's forward to one person, or even to us in a given moment, could be back to somebody else. And I mean, I love that you know, Sarah, what you can listen to when. But if I want to clean the house or do something like that, I may well put on music like that. And it's not a bad thing. Before you know it, the house is clean. That song really touched my heart. I know. I wanted to get up and dance, but I thought, geez, you know, there's people in this room I hardly know, so I felt like I had to be careful. But if I was at home, I would have been dancing. I think it just really matters that we're paying attention so that we're focused on where we are, how things are affecting us, and really living consciously and not unconsciously. So the point is, does it help us to feel uplifted and better? Or like you said, if you're listening to NPR and before you know it, you're a nervous wreck. I have that experience too. But, I mean, sometimes.
I wanted to add the reason that I'm really careful, maybe I didn't say it, I don't know, is that if it's because the music stays in my head and then I can't get rid of it. So that... Yeah, I wasn't here.
Earworms. That's called earworm. When you get something in your head.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I get. All right.
We're all going to go home and sing in the shower tonight. Kathy, we know Kathy's going to do that. Anybody else have any comments or questions? Here we are talking about all these different ways that pure divine energy manifests. It's electrifying in a certain way. Okay, so next week, Stephen will do the first hour on power, and I will do the second hour on love, which is very exciting. The transition may be a little challenging, but... You see, this is why Krishna said everything depends on this, going from the third chakra to the fourth chakra, from power to love. Every one of our lives depend on it. So let's see how it unfolds next week.